makes me sick to my stomach. What I cannot do is to preach the sermon I have planned. That sermon and the three drafts that followed are in the trash, where they belong. But they're a sure sign that I'm struggling as much as you are with the daily news reports of more and more senseless death. And maybe that's not what you came to church to hear. Maybe you get enough of the daily death toll in the constant barrage of information that comes at us from the radio, the television, the smartphone, the newspaper, and every manner of social media. Maybe you want this morning, this gathering, to be different. Maybe you want to hear morning has broken and see the sunlight come through the windows and ignore what goes on outside. Maybe you just need a break. You don't want to ignore it, but you just need a minute. Maybe you want to hear some resurrection hope when you come to this place. And I don't blame you. But here's the thing. Just like at a funeral, resurrection hope rings hollow if we fail to acknowledge the grief in the room. And the grief in the room is that there are a lot of people dead because of the color of their skin, or the uniform they wear to work, or the people they choose to love. Perhaps there can be hope of healing, but not until we first notice that somebody's in the ditch. Maybe in light of this week's horrific events, you came here to ask, as the lawyer does of Jesus, what can I do? Now that's not a bad question as long as it faces outward. The lawyer runs into a problem because he asks for his own sake. His question is not, what can I do to love my neighbor as myself, but what can I do to inherit eternal life? The lawyer wants to check a box. He wants to secure a favorable future for himself. As any good teacher would do, Jesus turns the lawyer's question around. So if we are asking this morning, what can we do? Hopefully what we mean is, what can we do for the flourishing of black lives that have been deemed by our society less important than white lives? If we are asking, what can we do? Hopefully what we also mean is, what can we do for the flourishing of police lives that are constantly put on the line to protect our communities? Hopefully the what can we do question faces out, not in. Unfortunately, the lawyer doesn't get Jesus' drift because he doesn't stop with his initial inward-facing question. Wanting to justify himself, Luke tells us, he goes on to ask Jesus, and who is my neighbor? For this question, scholars tend to vilify the lawyer, but I think this week we can relate. In the midst of a seemingly unending cycle of violence, maybe we're wondering where we can draw the line. Surely our responsibility stops somewhere. The wounds are too many to count, and Jesus, we just need you to tell us plainly, who is our neighbor? For whose welfare are we responsible? If we were to put flags on the front lawn, not only for Orlando, but for every life taken by gun violence, where could we stop? Is there enough lawn? The short answer is no. There is not even for killings that happen in the United States alone. So what about the bombings in Istanbul and Baghdad? Jesus, who is our neighbor? And when we ask this question right along with the lawyer, we need to acknowledge that we are really asking another question alongside it. Who is my neighbor? And who may I have permission to leave lying in the ditch? The other thing we may not realize is that when we ask those questions, the lawyer's questions, we are assuming a certain place in the story, a privileged place in the story. We typically read this parable as a call to help those in need. We imagine ourselves as ones who have a choice. We can choose to be the priest or the Levite who pass by, or we can choose the better part, to be the Good Samaritan. If we're honest with ourselves, we know that we pass by on the other side more than we stop to help. Our nature is that we hesitate to put ourselves at risk for the well-being of another. But what if we read the parable differently? What if we're the ones in the ditch? Would we rather die than have certain people help us? I invite you to take a look at the centermost page of your bulletin. You'll find two photos there. On the left-hand side, there's a photo of Hoshea Thomas. The photo was taken in 1996. There was a KKK rally in, of all places, Ann Arbor, Michigan. That doesn't seem like a smart spot for them, but you know. And there was a peaceful protest on the opposite side of the fence from the rally. Hoshea, age 18 at the time, was at that protest. And during the protest, someone on a bullhorn said, "There's one of them in the crowd," meaning that there was a white supremacist in the protest crowd. The person who was identified quickly took off. He was wearing a t-shirt with a Confederate flag and had an SS tattoo. So he was fairly easily identifiable. He tried to run, and the protesters followed him, supposedly to make sure that he was beyond the fence. But in the mob, he was thrown to the ground, and people started to hit him with their signs. Hoshea, again, age 18, When Jesus